You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of ICAC 2007, the 47th Annual InterScience Conference on Antimicrobial Agents and Chemotherapy. The conference took place in Chicago, Illinois, from September 17th through September 20th, 2007.
Welcome. This is Bonnie Goldman, Editorial Director of the Body Pro. I'm in Chicago at ICAC 2007, one of the year's HIV conferences. Right now, I'm in the poster session, where researchers are standing in front of their posters. There's nothing like hearing the results of research directly from those who actually conducted the research. It is these women and men who are transforming HIV treatment and care. In this podcast, the researchers will introduce themselves and then summarize their study. After their summary, I will ask a few questions.
Hi, this is Ben Young from the University of Colorado Health Science Center and Rose Medical Center in Denver. I'm presenting this poster on an analysis of kidney function in patients with pre-existing kidney disease who received tenofovir containing antiretroviral therapy in the HOPS cohort. This analysis was done to identify patients who were largely excluded from previous clinical analyses or studies in so much that they initiated tenofovir therapy when they had pre-existing kidney disease. We also identified patients who had prior history of kidney disease but started tenofovir with normal kidney function. So overall, we identified 19 patients in total, six of whom had pre-existing kidney disease but normal function at entry, and 13 who had confirmed kidney dysfunction measured either by having a creatinine greater than 1.5 or a creatinine clearance less than 50 milliliter per minute. Overall, again, 19 patients in the group, the median creatinine in the group was 1.7 with a calculated creatinine clearance of 56 and a glomerular filtration calculation of 49. Median time of follow-up was 13 months with a median of 5 creatinine determinations over time. 17 of the 19 patients received a now inappropriate dose of tenofovir, that is 300 milligrams once daily. In the follow-up period, 3 of the 6 patients with previous kidney dysfunction went on to have a change in National Kidney Foundation stage, in other words, a worsening in their kidney function. 2 of the 13 patients who had current renal dysfunction went on to have change in function. In aggregate, that meant that the overall intra-patient change in creatinine at 12 months was a decrease of 0.8 and a change in glomerular filtration of 1.3. So overall, what this means to me is that there is a group of patients, in this group of patients who have poor kidney function at baseline and risk of progression of kidney disease, a small but significant percentage of them go on to have worsening in stage. And that's consistent with the hypothesis that tenofovir is associated with increased risk of kidney disease. So that conclusion is not novel or surprising. What was surprising to me was that of the patients with past kidney dysfunction, 50% of them did not go on to have worsening NKF stage, and 11 of 13 patients with current kidney disease, most of whom were actually, now we know, overdosed, actually didn't have worsening kidney disease. So taken together, this means that tenofovir does place these patients at increased risk compared to the general, otherwise healthy population for incident kidney disease. But when necessary, because of needs, either because of drug resistance profiles or perhaps the need to treat coexisting hepatitis B, that tenofovir might be an option that could be utilized with appropriate caution and ongoing monitoring.
Uh-huh. So that's the clinical take-home. So it is fine to use it. But this is a very, very small study.
Yes, absolutely. So, and actually, I think the word fine is significantly overstated. I think it says that if you were forced because of clinical limitations and limitations in clinical choices, treatment choices, that you could entertain using this as an option. It wouldn't be my first option in this patient population by any stretch. Indeed, with newer knowledge about how to mitigate safety and risk of other nucleosides, I think that in patients who have pre-existing renal disease, if there are other options, I'm looking carefully at those other options. But this does say that if there are no other options, that this might be something that could be entertained, certainly better than not being able to suppress their HIV.
Okay, thank you.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on ICAC 2007 from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/ICAAC 2007.